The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, and our special guest of the day, Ken Simonson, who has been the chief economist of the Associated General Contractors of America, the leading trade association for the construction industry since 2001. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you. Good to be on the show.
And I also want to toss in there that Ken is also a member of NABE, which, of course, we talked about the NABE report. The latest NABE business survey was out yesterday, so it's kind of nice. We got a double header going this week.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, you know, Ken, I guess to kick it off, what are you guys seeing as a positive, in as far as, you know, construction data that's been coming out in the last NABE or the last couple of reports?
Well, I am glad to start with the positive news, because I think that sometimes gets lost. The construction industry has continued to expand now for 6 years. The low point in construction spending and employment was way back in January of 2011. And we have figures from the Census Bureau now through February of this year and employment figures through March, and they show a pretty steady upward climb. Now, I do have to say that the construction spending figures are still 1% below the all-time peak, which was way back in February of 2006. So here we are 11 years later, and spending still hasn't gotten back to where it was then. That doesn't even take into account inflation. If you look at what's happened on employment, that's been an even slower climb. We're still 11% below the all-time high in employment. Nevertheless, I think the outlook for construction spending and hiring this year remains positive, kind of subdued, but still on an upward trek.
We talked about yesterday, one of the issues that came up during the NABE business survey was that most businesses were saying the issue they were having with employment was being able to find skilled people. And are you finding that in your industry as well?
Oh, absolutely. In the NABE Business Conditions Survey, about a third of the firms said that they were having trouble filling skilled labor positions, and that was a noticeable bump up from the January survey. AGC of America, Associated General Contractors, has been doing its own survey of construction worker availability for the past several years, and that's consistently shown that at least two-thirds, sometimes as much as three-quarters of firms say that they're having trouble finding skilled or qualified craft workers. And it stretches across a whole range of crafts. The hardest to find has been carpenters, but it extends also to plumbers, electricians, concrete workers, and many other categories. And the home builders report the same thing, a lot of trouble, hardest of all to find both rough and finished carpenters for home building.
And do you think that's a function of millennials not wanting to pursue careers in those areas, or do you think that's there's been some hiccups at the U.S. borders? What do you think is driving that data?
Well, it's always easy. It's a cliche that old guys like me complain about the new generation not having good work ethic and so forth. I really think that this problem dates back probably 20 years, that we've been sending a message through guidance counselors, parents, school budgets that devalues craft work and instead tries to steer everybody to college. Well, that just isn't the right solution for a lot of people. And also, I think there's a false message out there about construction work, that it's all dirty, unpleasant, hard, dead-end work. And the reality is today that construction workers get to work with cool tools. The construction industry is a huge user of drones, for instance, for inspection documentation of conditions in hard-to-reach and dangerous places. A lot of GPS and laser-guided equipment on job sites, building information modeling, a lot of software going into that. And now people are being trained using these mixed reality goggles or masks that you put on, and you can see exactly where to position something and how to attach it so you don't hit your thumb with a hammer the way I would do.
Well, I think that's a great point, because I've noticed in my career in finance that as my friends are having their second and third children, you know, every once in a while a discussion will come up and someone will say, you know, would you tell your kids to be an iBanker? Would you tell your kid to be a lawyer at a white shoe firm, work in private equity? And I noticed that 9 out of 10 of my friends say no, because we don't build anything.
Mm-hmm. I think the construction workers.
Yeah.
You can take a lot of pride in what you do as a construction worker. I know I've had desk jobs all my life, and I feel good about what I've done. But when I think about somebody being able to drive by a landmark building or over a dramatic bridge and to say, I helped design or build or supervise the building of that, I think that's a really cool thing to be able to say you did at some point in your career. And construction careers, while you never have the certainty of what your next job will be after you finish one project, the reality is the industry has been hiring people and trying desperately to hang on to them at a greater rate than the overall economy. Right now, the job openings have really spiked compared to 4 or 6 years ago. And so the industry definitely wants to bring more people in, and I think the prospects are very good that anybody who joins the industry now will stay employed and will move up. Also, I should mention that wages are higher in construction than they are across the economy as a whole. So particularly for somebody who wants to get that first job out of high school or community college or a BA or coming out of military service, they're going to find a much better opportunity in terms of pay and advancement than they are in, say, retail or hospitality industries.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think it's important to remember, you know, that our great country was built on people who were willing to build, you know, to walk outside and to build, to build bridges, to build roads, to build the railways.
Absolutely. And frankly, I think we had a lot more public support for that before. When I look at the refusal of the federal government of Congress to raise the gas tax now for 24 years, and similarly in a number of states have rejected those kinds of increases, only about a third of them have raised their gas tax in the last few years, it's no wonder that we're seeing roads and bridges get into worse and worse shape. Other forms of infrastructure, we're also not getting the public support for maintaining, let alone modernizing our ports, our levees, our dams, riverways, and also drinking and water supplies, and cleaning up wastewater.
I came across a great report, and unfortunately we're coming up on 1 minute before we have to take a break, so we might have to get into this more on the other side. But there was a great report I found that it came from your organization about infrastructure, and it seemed addressing to the new administration. When we come back on the other side, I mean, of course, there was a real salvo that was, you know, shot across the bow this morning towards our neighbors at the north, and that's going to have an effect on your industry. I'd like to know how the new administration policies are affecting the contractors. And so we're going to take a break, folks, but when we come back on the other side, you're going to have Peggy Tuck and Chase Robertson and Ken Simonson, chief economists for the Associated General Contractors of America.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We're talking with Ken Simonson this morning, chief economist for the Associated General Contractors of America. He's also a member of NAIB, which you heard Patrick Jankowski going over the business survey yesterday with us. But we're talking about the construction industry, and there was a big headline this morning and a big story, Ken, that came out, because apparently the Trump administration has announced they would like to slap a 20% tariff on Canadian softwood lumber imports that are coming in that could have a big impact on your industry.
Absolutely. There are two issues that concern me. Softwood lumber is widely used in home building, and this morning the National Association of Home Builders put out a press release saying that lumber prices have already gone up $3,600 for a typical single-family home. So that's pretty dramatic for first-time home buyers in particular who are buying the lower-priced home and one that may have a lot of lumber used in it. It's not such a big issue for non-residential construction, but we have our own concern. That's the moves to put tariffs on foreign steel products of different types. In fact, we've already experienced that going back to December of 2015, some very high anti-dumping and countervailing duties, as they're technically known, have really pushed up the price of things like rebar or structural steel used in buildings over the last year and a half, and there have been threats of having a lot more trade action.
So just to dial this down, so tariffs at the border of Canada for lumber could impact the price to build a new residential home.
Absolutely.
Tariffs and an increase in steel and rebar could impact buildings, commercial real estate, and Trump's promise to rebuild the infrastructure and roads of America.
That's right. There's a lot of steel that goes into roads and especially into bridges and other types of infrastructure, certainly water and sewer pipes, and the treatment systems, dams that have reinforced concrete in them, many other types of infrastructure. So while the president has talked about supporting a massive increase in infrastructure spending, so far we haven't seen any proposals in that direction. In fact, the so-called skinny budget, the kind of outline of the budget that the administration put out in early March, would go the other way and cut back some categories of infrastructure spending that Congress had previously approved. We don't expect to see a more detailed budget for two or three more weeks now, but I'm not optimistic at this point that we're going to see actual support for infrastructure spending. And meanwhile, the cost of quite a few materials are starting to rise. Steel, copper, aluminum, gypsum wallboard, and certainly diesel fuel that contractors use a lot of, that's already gone up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ken, one of the things that you know, we're really struggling with, you know, putting the pieces together here at Robertson Wealth Management is exactly how Trump is proposing to finance a lot of his bold statements. I mean, beyond the wall, I mean, all of the other infrastructure spending that he's promising, I mean, if he really wants to lower corporate taxes from 35 to 15%, you know, where are the dollars, you know, actual dollars gonna come from and exchange hands to finance these, you know, these campaign promises?
Right.
We can't figure it out.
Yeah. His advisors have talked about economic growth, but I don't know of any economic model that shows that that huge a tax cut could stimulate enough growth to bring in the revenues to cover it. The reports today are suggesting that cutting the corporate tax rate to 15%, not broadening the base, would create a $2.4 trillion hole in federal revenues. And that's really hard to make up, particularly at a time when the labor force is growing so slowly. It's easy to talk about having more rapid economic growth, but you have to have somebody to produce the goods and services. And we've now reached the point that retirements are almost as numerous as people who were born in this country and are now reaching workforce age. So to have the labor force expansion needed to do work, whether it's construction, manufacturing, or services, you really need to have more immigrants. And that's another concerning point of the administration's policy, that we're really tightening the border in a metaphorical way. We're sending more people out of the country, and we're sending a message that workers aren't welcome. They're not secure here.
Well, I'll tell you one way Trump could finance this. He could fly private. I mean, public.
Yeah.
He could fly public. Because as we've been tracking, it's going to be the Trump gasoline bill on Americans. And in our estimate, is his current run rate of headed to Mar-a-Lago every 2.8 days is going to cost American taxpayers over $1 billion.
Well, I won't touch that one. That certainly sounds like a lot of money. But compared to $1 trillion that we'd like to see for infrastructure spending,
right,
I don't think that'll quite cover the gap.
That's fair.
Yeah, Ken, I would like to find out, because you can't look out, you know, in Houston, Texas, you see a tremendous amount of growth going on, and there's cranes everywhere, and, you know, Denver, of course, and the Case-Shiller, it's been in the top three areas, as well as the Pacific Northwest. What areas are you seeing the most growth?
Well, right now, Houston's competitor, Dallas, they're certainly pulling in the corporate headquarters from around the country and the region, particularly in the North Dallas area. But the city itself, I was there last week. I see a huge amount going on, a couple years behind what Houston experienced. But right now, Houston, of course, in something of a lull following the drop in oil prices,
right,
in 2015 through middle of 2016. I think Houston still has great growth prospects. Texas as a whole is adding population at more than double the national rate. And Colorado also growing much faster than it used to and becoming a more diversified economy. So Denver, I think, still has very strong prospects for both residential and non-residential spending growth. Seattle and to a lesser degree, Portland, they're doing extremely well. The San Francisco and Silicon Valley area still extremely hot. Los Angeles has also picked up speed, and both Las Vegas and Reno are doing an amazing amount of construction, some of it related to manufacturing, but also to distribution. Those are sectors that had not had a strong presence in that state previously.
You know, Ken, I'd love to get your perspective on construction in the Bay Area when we get back from this next break. Having lived there, I mean, people really don't rebuild until an earthquake, you know, takes structure down. So I'd be curious to get your insight on how you guys track construction in a place like that. All right, folks. Well, stick with us. Chase Robertson, Peggy Tuck, Ken Simonson, Chief Economist of the American General Contractors of America. Straight Talk Money. We'll be right back after these important.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Welcome back, everybody. It is the final segment of the Tuesday edition of Straight Talk Money. Peggy Tuck. We've got Chase Robertson. We've got Ken Simonson on the phone, Chief Economist for the Associated General Contractors of America. And right before the break, Chase, you were indicating that you wanted some information, you know, taking a look at the west side of the country.
Uh-huh.
Interesting enough, and when we talked about hiring, California and Oregon actually added the most jobs last year, so they must be doing some building out there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Ken, we'd love to get your thoughts on, you know, places, you know, not like Texas where there's plenty of space and you can still build a home for $250 a square foot. I mean, what are you guys seeing unusual trends, or how do you track a place like San Francisco where, you know, the average person doesn't rebuild until a earthquake brings their house down?
Well, it's a very tough market to build in. There's no question about that. They have some of the most rigid environmental laws in the country, and the topography is a challenge with the earthquake threat in many parts of that region. And yet, California continues to attract huge numbers of immigrants and of foreign investment money. California as a whole, the population has been growing about the same rate as the U.S., 0.7%. That's about half as fast as Texas or Colorado. And what's happening is that people are moving out of California to the whole western half of the U.S., somewhat to other states also. But because so many people do come to California, at least as their first destination from abroad, the state is continuing to add population at the national rate. And it's also finding a way to build both infrastructure, certainly office buildings going up like crazy in San Francisco. I was there at the beginning of the month, and just a huge amount happening in that downtown financial district and close to the Ferry Building.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I used to office at 1 Sansom Street.
Okay,
Sansom and Market. I used to walk to the Ferry Building.
You'd have to look up a lot higher these days. It's amazing how tall they're building there.
Yeah, no, I noticed. I noticed, especially on the water side, there's a lot of construction.
Well, that's true in a lot of cities now. We're getting many companies relocating to either downtown areas or formerly derelict areas close to downtown. For instance, just earlier this year, you had Caterpillar say it was going to move its headquarters from Peoria, Illinois, where it's been for more than a century, into Chicago. And Marriott is moving its headquarters from a traditional office park area in outer Bethesda, Maryland, to downtown Bethesda. Yeah, that's still a suburb, but it looks more and more like a city. They're doing an infill building surrounded by apartments and condos, restaurants, entertainment, right next to a subway station and a future light rail station, possibly, bike stations right there. Companies aren't building nearly as much out in the outer suburbs. I think in Dallas you have that example of the Legacy West neighborhood. Yes, it's outside the city limits, but it's got apartments and townhouses right around it, lots of restaurants, hotels built sure. right along with the office. So really integrating office with other kinds of construction in order to give people that so-called work, live, play option.
No, yeah, I really agree with that because, you know, for years Houston spread out, and it spread out so far that it's just, in my opinion, it really can't go much farther and it be, you know, without more public transportation. I mean, there's only so long people are, I think, in my opinion, are willing to sit in their cars to get to the office. And, you know, they're, when I left for college, you know, Midtown basically didn't exist. It was still kind of, you know, the rundown areas of downtown. Now, you know, years later, you know, it's built up and there are, you know, buildings are coming in around apartments, and, you know, that's what the younger workforce is really looking, you know, looking for in an employer.
Well, you're seeing a change in the demographics, but you're also seeing even the baby boomers are wanting to downsize.
Absolutely.
And become, you know, come into the city and where things are just a little more convenient. They don't have to drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have been seeing that trend over the last couple of years.
Yeah. Yeah. So Houston, in my opinion, is going up instead of out.
And, And I think that's happening in a number of cities. I mean, Detroit was a sprawling city, and now it has huge vacant areas, and yet mm-hmm. there is major construction of both office and apartments in the downtown Detroit area. Pretty remarkable for a city that's been losing population for decades. And other examples around the country, Milwaukee is getting its first new office towers in decades, and Cleveland, another city that's lost a lot of population, has quite a vibrant downtown area near the waterfront. So I think this is a trend that's going to last, both because more people are staying single longer, they're waiting longer to have kids, they're having fewer kids. In many cases, the schools have improved, at least selectively in some neighborhoods, or you have a charter school option. These are things that sure. enable people to say, well, I want to stay in a city even when I have the kids. It might be nice to have some land around me, but it's not worth giving up all that driving time. I'd rather be able to walk out the front door and get to entertainment or shopping or dining or my job without being tied to the car.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think the current generation, and as baby boomers, you know, are passing their, you know, they're halfway through their life. People in Houston, I've noticed, this is a common conversation I hear, is, you know, I just don't want that time in the car anymore. You know, that's 2 hours out of my life every day, and I'm just not willing
And people don't feel they need to go to a store to go shopping. They can order online,
right.
Or if they're living in an apartment, there are a lot of things that they either don't have room for or don't have a need of. They're not going to be buying lawn and garden care stuff. Chances are the appliances are supplied by the building owner. They're not picking those out, or at least they're not going to the store to buy them. So we're seeing a big change in what kinds of construction, less retail, more distribution centers, both out the massive million-square-foot ones out at the junction of interstates. But now you're getting these facilities that can deliver in the same day, in a few hours, within a metro area. And then self-storage, because people find, they're living in a small space, but they still want to hang on to stuff. So the market is changing.
Yeah, we've been investing in self-storage here at Robertson Wealth Management, and you know, we think it's going to hit huge home runs. That's just a theme that we really like. You know, Ken, you must be an avid Straight Talk Money listener, because you're touching on a lot of the themes that we like to talk about. It's either that or you're a smart cat, being a graduate of the University of Chicago and Northwestern University. But
well, I guess you guys have your pulse on what's going on with the not just construction, but the economy as a whole.
Well, we sure try. We sure try to do our homework, that's for sure. Ken, I want to say thank you so much for coming in. I feel somewhat positive about the whole construction industry. We'll see what happens, you know, with the new administration and what kind of you know, ringers they're going to throw your way. But really, thanks so much for coming on, Chief Economist for the Associated General Contractors of America.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.